Thank you, Don, and thank you, Mary. We love having you with us. I'm thrilled. And it's a pretty convenient time slot for me since it's right before me. I may not make it 100% of the time, depending on what's happening with the family, but I can probably make it a lot of the time. So, we're here. We're looking at Bernadette Roberts. And tonight I'm using the book, What is the Self? Or just What is Self? There's no the in it. And I'm on page 9. And of course, Bernadette is challenging the ways we thought about spirituality and truth before Bernadette. So it's good to be challenged, don't you think? And last week we talked a lot about the mind bending on itself. One of the things that Bernadette says, again, she talks about how, I don't have her little models, her little pieces of paper, so I'm going to draw on my hand. Is that okay with you guys? If my pen will draw on my hand. Oh, here's a Sharpie. It'll probably draw on my hand. Okay, can y'all see that little hole on my hand? It's not a hole, but it's supposed to be a hole, right? You see the little spot on my hand? Okay, so she's going to go on to talk more about this hole, but basically, all of this is consciousness. The entire hand is consciousness, and that little hole is the absolute. And in the beginning for us, she calls that just a little pinhole, which means that every single one of us have access to the absolute always, because we at least have a pinhole, right? But of course, as we go on the spiritual path, what happens is bigger and bigger holes get blown in this, right? Which we experience as shifts, which some people call awakenings. But in the beginning, there's this little bitty pinhole. And, after the ego falls away, the personal self, that pinhole, I'm not going to color it in too. Oh, I have to color it in more because you can't see it if I don't. You can see that, right? The pinhole becomes bigger. Imagine that solid color, right? It's a bigger hole, right? And once we get this bigger hole, we start having a very, very strong experience of the divine, the absolute, right? The first principle of God. But notice there's still quite a bit of consciousness here. So consciousness has not at this point totally disappeared into the divine. And what she says is we have a very strong experience of the divine. In fact, this is usually called unity consciousness. But what she's about to explain to us is the divine is still experienced through consciousness at this point. And this is what a lot of people don't realize, right? The divine is being experienced through consciousness. So let's listen to what she says as we go into this topic. She says, we believe our experience of the divine to be the divine. We believe our experiences of the divine to be the divine, when in fact, what we experience is the unconscious responding to the divine. We might compare this to the experience of being stuck with a needle. Our experience is our response to the needle, which means the experience is only ourself. It is not the needle's experience. So you guys can all imagine being stuck. Whoops, don't lose your page, Regine. I think I did. I think it fell away. So we'll find it again. Let's see. Here it is. Good. Okay, turn the book upside down. So if you were stuck with a needle, you might say, ouch, right? You would have an experience of the needle. What she is saying is that is your experience of the needle. It is not the needle's experience. So when we have these larger holes, because the ego is blown away, and we have this larger hole in consciousness through which the absolute is being experienced, that is consciousness experience of the absolute. It is not the absolute's experience. And that's the difference between the first awakening and the second awakening. The first awakening blows this bigger hole right in the middle of us because the ego is gone. But consciousness, the I am presence, is still here. And we have a very strong experience of the absolute. And many people mistake it for having a direct experience of the absolute, like being the absolute, when actually it's still the absolute as experienced by consciousness. And until consciousness is completely wiped out, so that there's only the absolute, we don't yet know the absolute's experience. Does that make sense to everyone? Yeah. No to how? Yeah to how? Maybe to how? So again, I'll just read what she just said. We believe our experiences of the divine to be the divine. You see, we believe that our experiences of the divine are the divine, when in fact, what we experience is the unconscious responding to the divine. We might compare this to the experience of being stuck with a needle. Our experience is our response to the needle. Ow, right? Our experience is our response to the needle, which means the experience is only of ourself. It's our experience of being stuck with the needle. It is not the needle's experience. We do not know the needle's experience or its particular dimension of existence, right? In fact, we do not know if the needle's experience is anything at all. So again, we often mistake our experience of the divine as the divine. And not until consciousness has completely gone away do we experience as the absolute. And therefore, we don't really know the absolute's experience. We don't have a direct experience of the absolute until the second awakening to the first principle of God. And in the seven steps this week, we had a quote that talked about the two different awakenings. It called them the absorptions, right? There was a first absorption and then a second absorption. She continues, while the divine, or the needle in my example, may be the cause of our experience, the experience itself is actually an effect. Thus, no matter how divine our experiences may appear to be, we cannot justify the leap that claims our experience is the divine or the divine's own experience. We have to admit that all we know in experience of the divine, and of the universe for that matter, is limited to our human dimension of knowing and experiencing, and that this limited way of knowing and experiencing is the boundary of consciousness. You know, another example might be, since I am fortunate enough to have had the experience of being an apple, right? Well, I now know that for most humans, their experience of eating an apple is purely from the human point of view. It is not the apple's experience of being eaten, right? So our experience of the divine is purely from a human point of view, or as we awaken to consciousness, purely from consciousness's point of view. It is not the absolute's experience. However, and this is the exciting part, at least to me, we can continue that awakening until we awaken to the absolute beyond consciousness, and that's when we know the absolute's point of view. That's when we know the absolute's experience, right? I don't know if that's exciting to you, but that's exciting to me. It's not like we won't ever know. Okay, she says the divine is beyond the dimension of consciousness, which we already know. So I'm moving over to page 10. And what she's going to talk about next is what she calls the knowing self and the feeling self. And what she's saying here is there are really two aspects to consciousness, the knowing self and the feeling self. The knowing self, she has been talking to talking about mostly up to this point. Because the knowing self is that reflexive mechanism of mind. Mind knowing itself. You can see that's why it's called the knowing self. In fact, starting at the bottom of page 10. Well, let me just start in the middle. She says, because of a review, you know, otherwise I wouldn't. This has all been said before. She really repeats herself a lot, but I think it's one of those things that needs to be repeated because it's, in a way, it's so dramatically different than the way we were understanding the teachings before. She says, when the mind bends on itself, what does it see? It sees itself, of course. This is I am myself. So again, if we go with the bending, I am myself, right? Because what I see is myself due to the reflexive mechanism of mind. She says, self is not a socially learned or conditioned experience. So, you know, one person I like to think about it here is Helen Keller. Because Helen Keller was blind and deaf from a very young age, which would have limited what she learned from the outside environment, right? I mean, if you could not see and you could not hear, you would not be as heavily conditioned as you are. Do you agree? But in spite of not being able to see or not being able to hear, she had a sense of self. And so what Bernadette is saying is the sense of self is not learned. You may have learned, for example, your name is Kathy or Francine, etc., right? But the sense I am, you did not learn. That sense I am is inherent, and it comes from the mind bending on itself. She says, self is not a socially learned or conditioned experience. And then she says something that may be a little different than what most of our spiritual teachers say. She says, it is not a mistake or an illusion. And, you know, many of our teachers call it the false self. And Bernadette Roberts in her video argues that point. She says it's not a false self. So, so in my humble opinion, if you'll accept my humble opinion as just that, it's all a matter of how you look at it. I think that in a lot of these spiritualities and Eastern religions and in A Course in Miracles, we are taught, keyword there is taught, to think of the absolute reality as the only reality, and therefore everything else is not reality, right? It would be an illusion or a dream. Bernadette, raised in Catholicism, was not taught to think that way. So what Bernadette is saying is the sense of self is a very real experience for all humans. Now, she does talk about what she calls the false self. The false self is who you were taught to be. So, for example, if you had parents that raised you that you have to be successful, and they defined what successful meant, you know, like you have to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, an engineer, a scientist, or you're a loser, and you just didn't have interest in those things, and you grew up to be in business maybe, which they didn't have as much respect for, especially if you didn't own your own business, you know, then you might have this sense that you're a loser because you weren't a white, you know, you weren't the type of professional your family aimed for. All of that learning and all of that conditioning she would call the false self. Anything you've been taught by others about who you are and you bought into and you believe, she would call that the false self. But the sense I am itself, she says, is not false. The sense I am is a very real experience that all humans have. And in fact, she calls that the true self, which sometimes our spiritual teachers call the absolute the true self. So you can see her language is a little different. But she says that's a very real self. And she says, in fact, when she was very little, and I have read about half of her biography. I haven't finished it. I need another vacation before I can read more. But she says in the biography, that when she was very young, like 2 and 3 years old, you know, her mother would say things that all mothers say, like, you know, you be a good girl and, you know, you be nice to the other children and you be quiet in church. And she said she had this sense. Now listen to this. She had this sense that her mother wanted her to be something she wasn't. And she says, but I am just myself. How can I be anything different? Now, you see, to me, that's where there was a little bit of a difference between Bernadette Roberts, who was, to be honest, a spiritual prodigy. She began contemplating God at age 2. How many of you guys did that? So she was a bit of a spiritual prodigy. But the difference between her and us is that when our mother said, I want you to be good, and I want you to be quiet in church, and I want you to be nice at school to the other children, we assumed, oh, I must be the opposite. Oh, I must be bad if my mother has to tell me to be good. I must not be nice or acceptable to the other children if my mother has to tell me how to behave. So we began to develop a false self that she never developed. Right? So she's talking about the sense of self, the I am, that she was born with and aware of, that the rest of us somehow were too outward focused on our parents, our caretakers, our teachers, the other kids, and we were receiving prompts from them, or we were even interpreting prompts from them and developing a false self, a conditioned false self. So when she says, this I am myself, this self is not a socially learned or conditioned experience. It is not a mistake or an illusion. She's not talking about the false self the rest of us developed. She's talking about just the sense of self, the I am, the unconditioned self that we were born with. And that she refers to as a real, she says it's a concrete function of the human brain. And without it, man would not be man, or human would not be human, right? She says there are not two selves, of course, one an object and the other the subject, which, you know, sometimes the mind talks as if there is. Like I mentioned last week, Eckhart Tolle, when he heard himself think to himself, I can't stand myself. You know, it sounds like there's one, I can't stand the other myself, right? When he heard his mind say that, he suddenly realized, wait a minute, can there be two? And this was for him, the contemplation that kind of blew his mind and he woke up. Well, she's telling us there can't be two selves. There's not an object and a subject. Again, it's this reflexive mechanism. Mind being aware of itself, of mind. And again, this is where we get that sense of self from. And then from here, this is where I really wanted to begin. That was kind of a review. She says, so we have to keep in mind that the reflexive mechanism underlies all levels of consciousness and self-knowing, and that its physiological roots constitute the unconscious or unknown aspect of the self or psyche. It is not possible, however, to discover the true depth of these unconscious roots until the reflexive mechanism has permanently ceased to function. And that reflexive mechanism, mind knowing itself, which also creates the sense of self, which she says is a very real sense, it's not the false self, right? That sense of self does not end until the reflexive mechanism ends. Now remember, she also calls the reflexive mechanism conscious. So again, what she's telling us is even when we wake into unity consciousness, there's still a sense of self. It's a different sense of self, but there's a sense of self. And from that sense of self, we experience the absolute. We experience God. We experience unity consciousness, but we do not yet know the absolute's experience. And the only way to know the absolute's experience is for this reflexive mechanism of mind, which is also called consciousness, to completely be disengaged, to completely end. So there is no more consciousness. There is no more sense of self. There is no more I am presence. And when that is gone, all that remains is the absolute. And then we know the absolute's experience from the absolute's point of view. It is not possible, however, to discover the true depth of these unconscious roots until the reflexive mechanism has permanently ceased to function. Thus, to the very end of the journey, the final boundary of consciousness remains totally unconscious and unknown. When the reflexive mechanism has permanently ceased to function, however, the true unconscious nature of this mechanism becomes known, known by its absence. And that's how she began the book, remember, by saying you can't really know what it is until it's gone. Then she goes on to say, and this is the top of page 11, about halfway through the paragraph, what few people realize or suspect is that the root experience of the feeling self is the experience of life and being. So what she was talking about before, the reflexive mechanism of mind, that was the knowing self, mind knowing itself. But she says there's two aspects to self, the knowing self, or the reflexive mechanism, and the feeling self. And, oh my goodness, listen to this. This is really getting deep when you're ready to hear it. She says, what few people realize or suspect is that the root experience of the feeling self is the experience of life and being. Thus, the true feeling self is the experience of life and being, which together with the reflexive mechanism or the knowing self composes the whole of consciousness and the entire self experience. So there's mind knowing mind and creating a sense of self combined with the feeling of existence. And that creates consciousness. That creates what we know as consciousness. And again, if you've listened to some of my other teachings, some of them maybe through Bernadette, some of them through Nisargadatta, what we have heard the masters explain to us, and also Dr. David Hawkins in the video about the final doorway, what we have heard the masters explain to us is that when you awaken from consciousness to the absolute, you go through an experience that seems to be the end of life or the end of existence, right? It's the end of life or the end of existence as you've known it. And so now what we're hearing her tell us is there's really two aspects to consciousness or the sense of self. One is the ability to know ourselves, the reflexive mechanism, and the other is this feeling of life or experience. Right, this experience of life. She says, although the experience of life and being seems to pervade the entire body-mind and to defy a specific bodily location, for the perceptive, it seems to have a point of origin in a mysterious, non-physical space within ourselves, a space we regard as the center of consciousness. Many people regard this mysterious center as the seat or the origin of consciousness. While this is ultimately true as a matter of developmental priority and experience, however, we cannot say which came first, the knowing or the feeling self. There are basically two sides of the same coin, which coin is the whole of consciousness. So I don't know if you guys remember in The Guiding Light, the previous book I was reading was The Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And the very last chapter was about the heart. And Ramana Maharshi kept telling everybody that in reality, the self could not be found in a location, you know, because in the body, because of course the body is within consciousness, right? So in reality, the self could not be found within a location in the body. However, he kept also saying that it was the heart, right? And in fact, he talked about the right side of the chest. What Bernadette is saying is that we will experience this feeling of life or this feeling of being, which is really a part of consciousness, somewhere in the trunk of our body, right? Somewhere in here. Some people may even experience it down in the gut. But if we want to search for this aspect of our feeling of consciousness, we want to be feeling into the trunk of our body to see where this feeling of life or this feeling of being is coming from. And for me, it's always been right here in the center of the chest, right? But she also goes on to say, and I won't read it, that that seems to vary with people. And she says it might even vary depending on your size, because it might even be the direct center of your body, which means if you're a different size than another person, that direct center is going to be in a different location. So when we want to focus on our feeling self, focus on our beingness or an existence, we can search for that place in the body where we seem to feel that aliveness coming from. And then just focus on that aliveness. Many people regard this mysterious center as the seat or origin of consciousness. While this is ultimately true as a matter of developmental priority and experience, however, we cannot say which came first, the knowing or the feeling self. These are basically two sides of the same coin, and the coin is the whole of consciousness. It is important to point out that the will is itself the deepest experience of the feeling self or the center of consciousness. Thus, in experience, the will is the experience of simple being. We are not always clear on the experience of will because as a volitional faculty, it can move in either of two directions, towards or away something. But this movement is actually the experience of desire, which is the movement of will. Will is a simple energy or being, while its movement in any direction is desire. And I'm going to go, you know, there's a little bit more about will. So we'll talk more about will next week. But what this really means is if consciousness, the feeling of life that comes from consciousness, what we look at as the feeling of life or the feeling of existence is actually will. Will is like a type of desire. And if you think about it, that's kind of like what NTI Romans chapter 2 tells us. Because NTI Romans chapter 2 tells us that the way this experience of the world started is we had a curiosity. What would it be like if I could create something different than what is, right? That is will, right? What would it be like if I could create something different than what is? That is will. And she's saying that will, and we often, I think, talk about the will to live. She's saying that will is what we consider existence or life. If you think about it, the absolute would be prior to will, which means true existence or true life would not have that will to live in it. And you can see then if you're walking through the final doorway and you're being asked to give this up, this will to live, think about how strong that will to live is in a human. You can see how there might be great, great fear. So I'm out of time, so I'm going to leave that with you to contemplate, and next week I'll come back and we'll look a little deeper at will. Okay?